Hi, this is JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Here at UK Health Radio, we're hugely saddened by the loss at New Year of my co-presenter, Dr. Mark Goulston. But we hope that you'll appreciate the chance to hear once again one of our Hurt Less, Live More shows in honour of a special friend. Here it is now. Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston. And it's just the two of us today. And Mark, what are we going to chat about, do you think? Oh, you wrote a really interesting piece that came out over the weekend into your email lists, inboxes, about optimism. And I was thinking we might talk about that a little bit, unpick that.
Yeah, I think we should, because the world seems to be blowing up all around us. We seem to see anger, violence, protests. I had an observation, and maybe it's more prevalent in America. It seems like the world is much more reactive to what's happened than proactive about solutions. And also, you can whip reactive people into a frenzy, and reactive people tend to take action. You know, anger mobilizes people more than let's try to talk this out in a reasonable way. And I think some leaders in America, want to take advantage of whipping reactive people into a frenzy because they'll get them to vote. And I think the challenge is, how can we be proactive? So what's the solution? And what you were referring to in this article I wrote, which was why I am optimistic in the long run. A friend of mine shared this quote from the former Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died in the past year. And she basically said that, life is more like a pendulum. It's not static. And the pendulum always swings back. And I put a little study back into pendulum, elementary school, whenever we played with them. And it was interesting because what it talked about was that when you're at an extreme end of the pendulum, you have all this built-up tension and potential energy. And when you're stuck there, it's waiting to explode, but the pendulum always swings back. And when it swings back, it gains momentum until it goes to the other extreme for a while. And if we can realize that that's the nature of life and society, and the final thing I'll say, and then I want you to weigh in, is I think the challenge is if we can shorten the amount of time when the pendulum is at an extreme position. Because when it's an extreme position, it's boiling over with all this tension. It's highly reactive. It can be explosive. And if there was a way of expediting and accelerating so that it doesn't get stuck there.
Yeah, and like lancing the boil, right?
Right, yeah. And yeah. I think it's, I think we can apply this to our health too, that sometimes we'll have unbearable pain. I don't know if you've ever had kidney stones. I've had a few.
Never.
it's unbearable. I mean, I remember learning about them in medical school, but when I had them, they would say it's one of the worst pains. And I remember going to the emergency room and I said, just kill me. Just kill me. That's okay. Just kill me. And so any of your thoughts about perspective and optimism? And
it's and I'll just say about pain and thinking just kill me, I used to get horrendous menstrual pains when I was younger, absolutely awful, and I used to think, well, if giving birth to, they all say childbirth is the worst pain women will ever experience, and I kept thinking, well, if it's worse than this, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to go down that road. Just kill me now. But getting back to optimism and the pendulum. Yes, I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that there is a lot going on in the world which is negative. There's a lot going on in the world which could lead us to be pessimistic. However, a lot is going right. And the way I often look at it to change that perspective so I don't go down that pessimistic route is to just view everything that's going on and then notice how the pendulum does always swing, as you say. And often we have to get to that point of deep crisis before things improve. So it's like being in the middle of a storm or being in the eye of the storm. You can be in the eye of the storm and it's swirling around you, but you know that it will break at some point and you will come out unscathed. And I think that's the perspective that I tend to have these days. It wasn't always the case in my life. You know, I would get as scared and as pessimistic as the next person very often. But understanding that these things are transient, that they will pass. And I like the pendulum analogy. Things will swing back. They will go the other way for a bit. And then they'll settle somewhere in the middle for a while. And then things build up again. But understanding that everything is transient, this too shall pass, is important. That's not to say that we don't take any action in the now. It's not to say that we just sit back and watch it all. Not necessarily, no. If you feel compelled to take some action in order to help bring about that change, then by all means, do so. That's very healthy as well. It doesn't help anybody to go down that route of buying into, you know, just allowing yourself to be flooded by and swamped by all this negativity, all these violent actions that are going on in the world. It's good to take a step back, be somewhat detached, and know that it's not affecting you immediately right now. It might do at some time in the future, but it doesn't have to impact you personally at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to run something by you. I probably discussed it on a previous show, but I've been developing this idea about how to prevent all mental illness.
Mm.
And the idea being, and tell me if you think this is accurate, I think that one of the things that all mental illness has in common, depression, anxiety, PTSD, schizophrenia, is that when you're in the throes of that, you trigger too easily. And one of the things that people don't realize when they trigger is we may not have control over our immediate emotional reaction, but we always have a choice how to respond. And something I'm trying to develop and looking for partners is I could see one of the ways to prevent mental illness in children, preserve marriages, prevent divorces. You could put this into school settings, is that you proactively, you know, once a week or maybe in families, even every day, each person talks about, well, this is where I got triggered today. And then each person starts to be able to use emotional language. And we say, well, how'd you feel? Well, I got angry. I got upset. I got frustrated. You know, what did you do? Well, I threw my computer against the wall, or I threw my phone. It wasn't working. And how did that work out for you? Not very well. If you had it to do over again, what could you have done differently? And I think if you practice that, especially seeing your parents model it, well, I got angry at your mom. I got angry at your dad. But, you know, and I yelled at them. And blah, blah, blah. Well, how did that work out? Well, they stormed out of the house and whatnot. And I think the simpler you can make things, the better. And I think if children saw that, and you could do this as part of skill building, you know, in early elementary school. And because if we can internalize, if we can get to the point we have a choice how we respond. We can build a resilience muscle. We can build a being able to feel an emotion, but not let the emotion drive a destructive reaction. And so I've been thinking about places to apply that. Does any of that make sense to you?
It makes total sense. And it's quite funny because today, every person I've been talking to has been talking about the fact that we have a choice. We will always react to stuff, but the difference between somebody who can get on with their lives and not fall into the pain, not fall into all the negativity, the pessimism, is that they understand they have a choice in that moment how to go forward. So, yeah, I completely understand what you're talking about. And I think it would be brilliant if kids could be taught that in schools. But I also agree, it's a question of modeling that. I think that the best way of teaching that is to model it. Model how that works, because in many ways, it's not something that's easily explained verbally, you know, because you've got to really, you've got to get it, you know, in the body, really. So it's not as easy as saying, oh, well, so when this happens to you, you just have to make a choice. You just decide, I'm not going to go down this road. You'll ask yourself, so how can I move forward? What's the best way for me to react to this? And then you do. Well, who does that in the moment? But if you see somebody, if that's modeled for you, it instinctively becomes a way of being for you, I think. Do you agree with me on that? I'm wrong with that.
No, I think you're completely right. And you added an element, which I hadn't thought about. You know, it's the body keeps the score.
Yeah.
So I think if one of the, you know, reflective things is not just what did you feel emotionally, but where did you feel it physically?
Exactly.
And you get people talking about, well, my stomach tightened, my throat tightened, I got a headache. And then you spend some time because I think when you can be aware of something as it's happening, awareness can distract you away from reactivity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah. So it's, it would be great, wouldn't it, if kids in school or parents could model this to their kids, because right from the word go, there's always so much that's down to our home environment and how we react to the external world, as you and I both know, and we've talked about a lot on this show. So it would be fantastic. And maybe, you know, when people are going to parenting classes or, you know, sort of mother and baby classes or that kind of, maybe this is the kind of thing that we should be highlighting in those classes, not just the physical side of things and what to expect when you have the baby, you know, how to look after the baby, that sort of thing. Maybe these are things that we should be teaching all the time. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And then if you could roll that out through schools, through medical practices, anywhere, it'd be fantastic. Yeah. Because I think that's one of the major things that stops people from achieving what they want to achieve. And it really is one of the major things, I think, that throws people into depression, anger, frustration. Yeah. Huge. And it's so simple in a way. Yeah. I like that. So on that note, we're going to go to a break now, and we'll come back with more on this topic right after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston, psychiatrist and coach. And yeah, we were saying in the break there, Mark, that really you want to make things as simple as possible so that people can really get it. So how would we do that?
Well, I think I've shared this. I watched a documentary called Mr. Rogers and Me, and it's not one of the well-known ones. It was done by a neighbor when they lived on Cape Cod. And one of the things that Mr. Rogers talked about is it's better to be deep and simple than shallow and complicated.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as I get older, I cannot remember now a 7-number phone number. I have to keep repeating it in my head. And when you're young, you had space in your head. And so I really appreciate something that is just simple, and then maybe good things happen organically from it. And so I think, just remembering you always have a choice when you're triggered. Mm. It may not immediately come to you, but just remembering you always have a choice. And that's why I like the idea of if you've been triggered and you didn't know you had a choice, you can always go back and say, if that were to happen over again, I think this would have been a better thing to do. And then hopefully that sinks in. And then when it does happen again, you make a better choice. I just see it playing out everywhere. The world is a powder keg now of people being triggered.
I think you're absolutely right. And people are being triggered and reactive instead of proactive. Absolutely. I think you were spot on with that. Spot on. Everybody is being insulted. People are constantly reacting to the slightest slight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not doing any of us any good. But then you see, people will say as well, if you talk to them about choice, they say, well, what choice do I have in the matter? What choice do I have? I don't have any choice. I have to do this, that, and the other. But it's not so much choosing to. So in other words, if you don't have very much money, but you say, well, I choose to go to the other side of the world for a holiday, but you don't have them. It's not that kind of choice. It's saying, well, I have I can decide to be this or be that in the moment. I can decide to be triggered and feel, as if somebody's insulting me, or I can just let that go and do something a lot more useful and proactive with my life than just sitting here and complaining about somebody slighting me. For instance, each of us has those choices. Everything in that sense is a choice. How we turn up in the world is a choice. So, you know, I just wonder, when you were practicing as a psychiatrist, did you have these conversations with patients that came to you, or was this something that still wasn't quite being talked about?
I think we try to do it, but one of the reasons I'm putting out all these videos, the I'm Dying to Tell You, is that when patients came in and realized I saw a lot of suicidal patients, they didn't have the capacity for insight. They wanted pain relief and whatever. And so I developed a lot of insight that I couldn't share, because what was on the top of their, you know, minds was the emotional pain release. Now that, and that's different when you go to a physical doctor, because you can educate them about this is why you're getting an antibiotic and whatever, and it's not the same kind of thing. And I also got this interesting, I write this down. Here's an article we can co-author. I don't know if we've done it, but you could
I'll
run with
write
it.
it down. I'll write it down.
How to Turn Hindsight into Foresight.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think one of the ways to train us is after we've reacted and made things worse, you know, I think we can all say, you know, if I had that to do over again, this is what I would have done differently. And if you get into the habit every time you've made something worse, instead of beating up on yourself or deny and blaming others, if you could get in the habit of saying, if I could have done that over again, this is what I would have done. But I think that would be really how to turn hindsight into foresight, the antidote to a reactive world. That's the subtitle.
Well, I like the sound of that. And, you know, but it is really difficult, isn't it? When you're in shock, let's say, maybe, or you're in severe pain, it's very hard for people just straight off the bat to say, oh, I'm in shock, so, but, you know, I don't have to be reactive to this. I can deal with it in a much more appropriate way than I might normally have done. Same with pain. It's almost like counterintuitive. Do you know what I mean?
Well, pain, like I go back to the kidney stones, it was terrible.
Yes.
And even though I knew as a doctor, oh, it's a kidney stone, you know, I didn't have to say, just kill me. I knew they would give me morphine and, you know, and then we'd see how to make it pass, or they'd have to go up and get it or something. And when you're jumping off the gurney, like you want to hit the ceiling, and then you get the morphine, it's like, oh, this is, I could see how addicts like this stuff.
Do you know, I've never had it. I've never had morphine for anything. Touch wood. I must touch some wood.
There you go.
Yeah. And so, but I'm sure that it's a fabulous feeling when you've had severe pain and you get that shot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I, you know, it seems so simple. I just would. But you know what it is, in this day and age, you need an influencer. You need a who's the great singer, sharing in
Ed Sheeran.
yeah, because you know, I mean, someone like him, he's
Yeah.
well liked. He wants to help the world,
Yeah.
and
And has talked about his own issues.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all you, so if you're listening in and you know anybody,
Or
you
if
know,
you,
what
or
if
if Ed Sheeran's listening in.
Ed Sheeran's listening in, Ed, you want to sponsor the
Yeah.
because all you know, it's amazing, you know, the power of these influencers, and there's algorithms about how to get even more followers and all that. And you know, I was on a show with Jordan Peterson has a daughter, Michaela Peterson,
Yeah.
and she has a pretty big podcast. And so I'd had Jordan on, and I had, and then his daughter interviewed me, and it went really well. I mean, you can find it, Michaela Peterson, Goulston, and right out of the gate, you know, she edited it where she's crying. I mean, from what I'm saying, and she said, you know, this is possibly the best podcast I've ever heard.
we've ever that's lovely.
We've ever done.
Yeah.
And Dr. Goulston's maybe the best storyteller I've ever heard. And he has no social media. And you know, that was a few years ago, and I've reached out, and it got you know, like 900 comments in a day. And I reached out and said, you know, it'd be great to come back on, talk about death and dying, and, you know, but it's not going to happen. I mean, because, you know, she's, you know, that's like shelf space in a store.
Yeah.
You have to pay for shelf space. And it's just the way of the world.
Yeah. So then how do we go forward? I mean, yes, you're talking about influences, and maybe, you know, the internet gets a bad rap because it can give us a false view of life, of what life should be like. So everybody looks at Instagram and sees all these fabulous images, and everybody says, oh, you know, you've got a fantastic life, but you're only seeing like this tiny, tiny aspect of somebody's life. And then you think that your life should be as perfect as it seems through that tiny window. So that's the downside of social media and the internet. But the upside is influencers can help people and can model to a certain extent exactly what we're talking about here. So maybe there's something to be done there as well. Maybe you're right. Maybe we do need somebody, or it would be great to have somebody who has a fantastic following, and they can model this and talk about this in these terms. Because I think the modeling is important. The modeling is the key. But you have to bring somebody, you have to bring it into people's awareness as well. More of a conversation about it, I guess.
Well, what would be great, since we think aloud and we're having a conversation, and we hope our listeners find it interesting listening in, I think if we could find someone and the three of us make a pact to try this for a week, and it's a two-part show. We each come back and we commit to each other, you know, in the next week. When we get triggered, you know, we're going to pause, have the emotional reaction, maybe feel it in our body, but then choose something that we normally wouldn't, and then come back and see how it worked out. And
well, you and I could just do that, right? We could just do that.
Yeah, we could do that today, but we're not famous. We're not famous.
No, that's true. Well, you are famous, Mark. You're known worldwide with all your fabulous writing, and you've been speaking. You've spoken in all sorts of countries, so you are famous. But yeah, no, that could be a good idea. So anybody who knows anybody who's famous who might be interested in taking part in this, we'd love to hear from you. It is interesting, but it is true that I've seen us go just kind of helter-skelter into this full-on reactive world where everybody is reacting constantly, and there is very little proactivity. There's very little of anybody on any any side of the political spectrum. I don't see anybody doing anything proactive.
Oh, yeah, I'll just use President Trump as an example and I'll probably write something on this, that he has prided himself as being a counterpuncher. You know, you hit me, I'll hit back further. But it seems to me that a leader can't be a counterpuncher. I mean, they may need to come back, and if terrorists have invaded them, and do whatever they need to do in the moment. But I think what we need from leaders are people who can be proactive, but what happens is they're reacting to the polls, they're reacting to the numbers.
Exactly, yeah.
They're reacting, how's this going to affect my election and all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what we need, again, in political life, we need people who can model this different or more effective approach. right? So, maybe we need our politicians to really change the way that they behave in public life so that it's modeling that for the rest of the population. So instead of reacting, doing something which is constructive, purposeful, proactive, and it doesn't have to... See, I hear the argument that that's not happening because of votes. But if you are obviously doing something for the good of others, surely people will vote for that. That's what I don't understand. I mean, I hear the argument and I see what everybody's talking about, but surely when you model something which is worthwhile, constructive, good, obviously helpful, surely people get that and they would still vote for you. Or is that as a typical kind of aspect of the psychology of politics that is prevalent today?
Well, I think the psychology of politics is angry people take action, whereas because of their reactivity, whereas people who are more thoughtful, it's much more measured, and the world is increasingly impatient.
Yeah,
and I have an idea. Maybe you can come up with someone. I'm thinking that in America, there are a number of celebrities who have had long-time checkered pasts, like a Britney Spears.
Yeah.
You know, she was on a conservatorship, and now she's on her own. But there's a lot of people who still think, she'll never change.
Yeah.
You know, it's dyed in the wool.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could get someone who has a high profile for really erratic behavior and get them to try this, that could help it explode. So maybe someone, and I don't know who the equivalent in England would be, you know, of someone in the public eye, which is, you know, there's a kind of fascination, and you're not angry at them. You just wonder what their next disaster is going to be.
Yeah, well, it's a good point, which we will carry on discussing after another break. We're just going to take a few minutes to listen to these messages from our sponsors, and we'll be back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston. And Mark, we were talking before the break about trying to find a celebrity who could model this for us. And it would be great, wouldn't it, if we could actually do something that would bring this to the consciousness of the masses. It would be great to do it on a big scale, because there are a lot of people like you working very diligently at their practices, helping people, teaching this message, write books about it. But how many people read the books? How many people come to people like you for help? Not that many, not as many as are needed to create the sea change. So it would be great if we made this a bit of a mass movement, wouldn't it?
Yeah. This is a slight tangent, and I've given this advice on the show before. Recently, I've been speaking to people because of what I'm facing. They talked about having very busy lives, and you know, one of their parents got sick, and they just stopped their lives, and for the last 3 days of their mother or father's life, they just went to the hospital and held their hand. And, you know, how their mother or father finally let the guard down, you know, and there was this real affection that really hadn't happened during their entire life. And I've been making a point in some of what I'm learning from what I'm going through is don't wait until the end to be able to experience something that's incredibly powerful. And when I've spoken to some of these people, and it was a very tender moment, especially after a rocky, maybe relationship, but at the end, it was the end. Invariably, they'll say it was one of the most profound experiences of their entire life. You know, those 3 days. I don't know if they were thinking, I'll finally be, you know, rid of the bugger. But, and I've been proposing that to people. So I remember there's a tip I've given on some of the shows where if you're very busy, you know, reach out to someone, a family member, you know, a partner, a child. And if you were to say to them, have I ever made you feel that I was too busy to listen to you?
Yeah.
And that maybe that made you feel that you weren't worth listening to. And just even having that conversation. And many times that person will look away from you because you've just hit them with the opportunity for some tenderness. And they might say, oh, you've been busy, you know, you're a good person, you're busy, I understand it, you're under a lot of stress. But if you persevere and say, no, this is really important. Have I ever made you feel I was just too busy to listen to you? And how often do I do it? And give me an example of when you really wanted me to listen to you and you just couldn't get me to. And I think when you do that, not to beat up on yourself, but frequently what will happen is the other person, you know, won't even be able to look at you and they'll be tearing up because you're finally acknowledging that you did something intentionally or unintentionally that hurt them. And in the moment, you're showing them that their hurt matters to you. And it can be a game changer. And I think you can have those. So I think that's another example of the power of hindsight.
Right, yeah. It is curious, though, isn't it, how when we're in the moment, it's almost as if we have to train ourselves to, in the moment, be aware that we have a choice and how we go forward. Because certainly for most of my life, I would react and think later, or react and contemplate later on my reaction. There was no, well, you know, pondering on how am I feeling? Where am I feeling this in my body? How is that happening? Okay, you can just let that go. So now where do we go forward from here? There was none of that. I had to teach myself that, which took a long time.
Well, do you think that, because I'm just tracking with you, and I've certainly been that way, and you know, sometimes when we are triggered, we feel stuck, we feel pent up.
Yeah.
And then when we start to vent and react, we start to pick up momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And momentum feels like a lot of power. It's not constructive power. But when you contrast feeling stuck, I guess that's what happens with road rage. You know, you feel stuck. You feel stuck from something going on in your life, in your job. And then you couldn't explode at work or at home. And then someone cuts you off.
Yeah.
It's all pent up. And you then blow at them. And I think that feeling of momentum really takes you over.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I can see that happening. I can see that does happen. Yeah, it's when it comes back to not a particularly pretty analogy, but the lancing at the boil, right? It comes back to that point where everything has to just overflow. It's like a volcano erupting. That's maybe a better metaphor. So you get to the point where you can no longer hold that back. It's just got to absolutely all come out. And it probably comes out hugely inappropriately, you know, with completely the wrong people, completely the wrong place, time, everything. But it's just at that point where the slightest thing triggers it and wham, you're going off in all directions. We've just had bonfire night here on November the 5th. And, you know, it's like going off like a rocket. And you can't stop it. And it just goes where it's going to go. And then afterwards, maybe there's a bit of remorse, which is also, you know, not great.
I want to share something with you. It's again, we're having our conversation and hopefully people are finding some value in it. Something that I've noticed is that understanding another person doesn't mean you're agreeing with them.
Yes. And this is the other thing that I cannot fathom these days. Everybody has to understand and agree with everybody. Again, in politics, it's like, or just in public life generally, you have to agree with everybody. Otherwise, you're cancelled. I don't get it.
Totally. I'll tell you, it's an interesting way to identify manipulative people in your life. Because I recently had a couple of conversations with such people, and, you know, and they'll be adamant about something, and, you know, you can't get a word in edgewise. And then I'll listen to them and I'll say, I can understand how and why you might feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, furthermore, it doesn't mean that I'm going to take any action. And what happens is they get really, you know, miffed by that.
Yeah.
Well, if you understand what I'm saying, you need to conform your action to what you understand. No. I will act according to what I agree with. And the more they get, you know, huffy about it, you know, the more you're dealing with a manipulative person.
Mm.
And this could be the only thing that our listeners get out of today's talk.
Yeah, it might be. But I see that trend, and I see it as really quite unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that's going to end up, but I hope that it dissipates. I hope the pendulum is going to swing the other way at some stage pretty soon, because it's very unhealthy. There seems to be so much of that around, and the expectation that everybody has to agree with everybody else, or if not everybody else, the person who's voicing the opinion. You know, you've got to agree with me, or otherwise, you know, you're not worthy of me having anything to do with you. You're not, yeah, you don't have a voice.
This is UK Health Radio. So I'm wondering, I'm thinking about pendulums, and I'm just grabbing this out of mid-air. You know, before Princess Diana, you know, died, you know, you know, the whole world looked at the British Empire as non-emotional, you know, mm-hmm. you know, a kind of, you know.
Did they?
Well, no, emotional, they'd get angry, you know, in Parliament and all that. Yeah. But in terms of like compassionate and right. outpouring of mourning, and, you know, as I watch that truly sad event, you know, and then the outpouring, and maybe the pendulum, I remember for the Queen, you know, yeah. she wasn't showing up to the flowers. She wasn't yeah. showing up. And, you know, and I think there was pressure on her. You need to come and show up. And, but can you think of other examples, you know, from our listeners from the UK that would bring to mind a pendulum that switched from kind of one orientation to another?
I think that certainly is one where I don't think anybody expected the same outpouring of public grief that we saw then. And I think it has become very much part of life in the UK now. People are far less wary of showing their emotions in public. I know that the UK used to have a reputation for a stiff upper lip and, you know, just keep calm and carry on, you know, which was probably, well, okay, might have been a Victorian thing, but also, you know, during the war and the Blitz and all of that, you know, you just kept going. You were very stoic. You didn't show any emotion. It was all, we'll just get through this. I don't know of any other issues other than it's become much more, and this is a healthy thing, I think, it's become much more acceptable to talk about health issues that weren't talked about before. So we can talk about mental health, okay, which, you know, we're both interested in here. We can talk about things that would be swept under the carpet before, like menopause, you know, like testicular cancer, that kind of thing. We are far more open now to talk about all of these things, and that is a good thing. And that's, you know, the pendulum swinging that way towards being people being able to fully openly speak about issues which before were never talked of, never really talked of. We had Alexia Leachman on the show recently talking about fear of childbirth. That would never have been talked about a few years back. Never. Nobody would even acknowledge that that existed a few years back. So that's one example, I think. And I think it's healthy.
So what could serve as a catalyst for turning impulsive, destructive actions into conversations? You know, I mean, you'll hear about it. Oh, they need to start talking in the Hamas Israel thing, you know, and the heads of state need to be talking. People know it's important, and when they've immersed themselves in it, like my friend with his dying parent, it's like this is so much better than reacting.
Mm.
And yet I don't know what the
I mean, isn't it the what's in it for me? Isn't it, you know, a really powerful motive? You can't change people's beliefs very easily, can you? So if somebody believes that this is the only way forward, this is the only way they can be, you have to find something hugely powerful to shift that belief, because it's virtually impossible with an entrenched belief to move that unless you have something even more powerful to put in its place. So I think it's the whole what's in it for me, what's in it for us, what's in it for our group, that has to be hugely compelling for anything to change. I mean, that's what I think anyway, from, you know, from what I've learned, from what I understand. Until you get that, or until, you know, you've shown and demonstrated an example of how that can be, I think it's very, very difficult. And I'll tell you what else is very difficult. We're coming to the end of the show. We are running out of time here, but what do you think about that before we leave?
I'll just say it really quickly. A friend of mine is one of the founders of compassionate capitalism. And I said to him, compassion is not a means to an end. It's an end in itself. And I said, I think that spirit of compassionate capitalism means, oh, if you can show compassion, you can sell more things and get people to do what you want. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be having a discussion. I said, look, it's a means to an end. And the end is it heals things. It heals relationships.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And that's probably a nice way to end our show today.
I love it. I love it. As ever, it's been great having a chat with you today. And thank you to everybody who's been listening. And we hope that you'll join us again. We'll have more guests coming up. Or we do have more guests coming up. So do join us another time for more Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio. But for now, from me, it's goodbye. And from Mark, goodbye for now.